Tia. Plazo's podcast. Episode number 31. I think that I have just entirely decided that I'm going to just throw in whatever the hell I feel like as far as music goes.
Yeah, and I think that intro makes me equal parts sad and happy.
It should.
It's a strange mix. I don't know what to do with that.
Right. What about you, Jason? Are you a Beck fan?
Yeah, a little bit. It sounded more like something the Bloodhound Gang would have put out at first.
But it's Beck.
I mean,
it's Beck. This is old school Beck.
I remember when I got my first Atari. It reminded me of Atari, so I kind of like that.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good. I'll take that. So, we're here, back, finally.
Back?
At Pazzo's podcast.
And I'm barely sobered up. I've barely sobered up from the Oktoberfest celebration. That was a great event they have out
there.
Wasn't
it fun?
Every year. It was really spectacular. The food's fantastic. The entertainment is great. They had beer too, is what I hear.
Yeah, just a little bit.
Yeah, I don't remember
not
the
a lot.
Beer part.
When you can have a keg that's been blessed, I mean, I don't think it gets much better than that, honestly. I mean, that is when it's really hitting the spot.
Did they bless all of the kegs?
I hope so. I'm going to say they did.
Well, why does one get blessed and the others don't?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's unfair to the other kegs.
They had to have blessed all
I'd
the other
pissed
kegs.
Pissed off I was another keg.
So, we are here, of course, again at Pazzo's. It's great to be back. I know that this is our home base, so we like to stay here. And tonight's pint night is...
It is a pint night. It's a...
Mile Wide Beer Company.
Yep, that's right. Mile Wide Breweries. Louisville Brewery coming in here. They're not local, but they're regional. They're an hour west of here, and so they do some really nice stuff.
They have
two beers.
They've made me want to go to Louisville, which is a very, very difficult task, honestly. I don't usually want to go to Louisville.
That takes a lot.
I like Louisville.
the Louisville scene is there for a little while. I really felt like Louisville's beer scene did not have an edge on Lexington. Whenever we had breweries here in Lexington that cropped up, like Country Boy, like Wessex did, and soon after that, Blue Stallion, Ethereal. There's a while there I felt like the Lexington beer scene was better than Louisville's, and I thought it was great. But you know the problem is? Eventually they catch up. And once they do catch up, I need more volume over here, Josh. Thank you very much. But the problem is Louisville's beer scene really did catch up, and they caught up really, really quickly. And it did so on the heels of really a couple different breweries. They did so on the heels of one, which I think was Monic Brewing Company. The other was Mile Wide Brewing Company. And so we have the Mile Wide guy, one of the owners, and a fellow Cicerone. By the way, there's not a lot of Cicerones out there. They don't grow on trees, by the way. They do not. But we have in the house tonight... Mr. Scott Schreffler, and so Scott is in the house. He's one of the owners of Mile Wide Brewing Company, and so he's hosting a pint night tonight. So, Scott,
yes,
how
sir.
You doing, sir?
Are
you
doing well.
Okay?
How are you all doing?
Doing great. Are you sober?
Yes.
Wrong answer. We cannot do this show sober. We've tried it before. It doesn't work. So there's some beer in front of me. It's your Pale Wheat Ale. Talk about your Pale Wheat Ale a little bit.
So the pint night tonight, we got two different beers on tonight. The wheat is called Barstow. It is a 5.5% American wheat ale. We use a little bit of sweet orange peel in the boil for a little bit of citrus. So what I like about it, it's very approachable for your average consumer. There's a nice kind of lemony character from the wheat itself. There's a little bit of creaminess on the finish, and then that nice little bit of citrus from the American from the orange peel. So very approachable, for a lot of people. If you like German wheats, if you like the Belgian wheats, it's along those same lines, but just a little different. So very approachable for a wide variety of drinkers.
Seems to me to be a bit very utilitarian kind of beer. When I say utilitarian, because it's characterful enough where it carries just enough culinary art to really keep people guessing about what flavor's coming next. As the beer outgasses, as it changes flavor, as it warms up, as your palate acclimates to certain flavors, there's another flavor out there. So we're not talking about a particularly bland beer at all. But at the same time, we're not talking about anything that's really going to blow your mind on the culinary art scale. We're talking about a beer that has some hop character, but talking about a beer that has some delicacy, has some finesse, but it is very drinkable. This is a beer that you can basically just turn your brain off, watch the game, carry on a conversation, do some nice things with. It also has a couple different facets to it, too. So,
yeah, I mean,
what are your thoughts in terms of what I just said?
I think every brewery has to have that. I mean, that's what we're making beer for, the masses. You know, we're not making beer for this niche group over here. We make those beers that maybe appeal to those drinkers, but we need to have something for everybody. I mean, Barso is a perfect example of that. We're getting to the end of we brewed a Helles Lager that was very well received. Actually, I think the Beer Trap had a keg of it on Hoofed Gold, which roughly translated to Love Handles, which we like that. So. So, you know, you have to have those beers that appeal to everybody, because not everybody's going to be a hophead. Not everybody's going to want a high ABV stout. Everybody's going to want a Belgian or a sour or any of these. You know, you need to have beers that appeal to a wide variety of drinkers.
And those are usually the ones that sell out anyway. I mean, I know from knowing our sales at Village Idiot and Pazzo's and Baron Butcher that the more kind of middle-of-the-road beers are the ones that sell the most volume-wise.
Sure. Well, and as a business, too, I mean, you know, as a restaurant especially, you know, one of your jobs is to get check averages up. So what are you going to sell more of, that one snifter of a 12-ounce beer or a 5% session IPA?
Right.
You know, you're going to sell 3 to 4 of those session IPAs to maybe one of those snifters, maybe because of cost, but also because of the higher ABV and people, you know, want to have more than one drink.
Yeah.
And we see it all the time. I know most people listening to this podcast, they're beer geeks. They're beer fans. They're people that really chase the beer scene or have some sort of passion about the craft beer scene that's really taking it to a hobby level. That's the reason why you do this in your spare time or when you're supposed to be working, but you're listening to us anyhow. By the way, thank you to all those people that are doing that. That's awesome. But you guys are going to talk about the full-flavored stuff, the full-bodied stuff, the imperial stuff, the stuff in bourbon barrels, the stuff with exotic ingredients. That's what gets the chatter. But whenever you look at the numbers behind the scene of how we run businesses in the beer scene, the numbers really do reflect we need that component. We need people to come in and kind of clamor over the really exotic stuff. But we also need that base. That base that really right. gravitates toward lagers, wheat beers, you know, things like, you know, the Belgian wheat beer or things like the German lager or some very, very somber beers. And even we see it with some uber beer geeks. Whenever they come in, they're going to hit that bourbon barrel imperial stout. They're going to hit that barley wine that's, you know, double dry hop. They're going to hit the imperial IPA. But then after they've gotten a couple of those under the system, now their mentality changes. Now we go to say, hey, I want to hang out with my friend for another hour or so, but I don't need any more high-octane beer. Now I need something a little bit more somber. So the one thing I love is that there's options for the craft beer lover that says you have permission to go with a lager, and you don't have to go industrial light lager from America.
I think it's
you
great.
Can go light, but you don't have to go bare bones. You don't have to go least common denominator beer. You actually have something well crafted that is 4% alcohol. That is something that's very light on the palate. It doesn't require a lot of contemplation, a lot of thought, and it's just something you can very comfortably drink with friends and enjoy conversation.
Yeah.
I'm glad that American Craft Brewery has embraced that.
I think it depends on what the purpose is too. A lot of times when you're coming in to eat, you want something that is not going to overpower the food,
yep.
something that is going to be, you know, sort of not neutral, but that is going to complement, you know, the food. But then if I'm just going to drink, if I'm just going to have beers at the Beer Trap or somewhere like that, then I'm going to go just based on flavor of the beer. So, you know, here, sure. our biggest sell, even though I hate to admit, with 48 taps, our best-selling beer is Bud Light. It's just that's
it's still
the way
America,
it is.
Isn't it?
You know,
it's still
and then,
America.
And then you round out that top five with things like, you know, Blue Moon and Cougar Bait and West 6 IPA and stuff like that. So, I mean, I think consumers want something different when they go out to drink a beer than when they go to eat.
Well, and that's the great thing about beer dinners, and I know that, you know, I used to work for Schlafly out of St. Louis, and we did a few beer dinners at the Village Idiot, and, you know, and that's what's one thing that is great about beer dinners is you get people to think of beer as more than just this beverage that you're drinking with your friends when you're tailgating or out at the bar. You're thinking of it, oh, it can enhance my meal. It can do all these other things that people have understood that wine does for years. but have never really, you know, given beer the credit for that same ability.
Yeah. With pairing, I think the difference in beer and wine, though, is we've talked about this before. Wine is, like, whether if it's a red or a white, it's going to have still a very similar taste. You know what I mean? Like, wine is wine. I hate to be, you know, to drill that in again, but that's why I think beer pairs so much better with food than wine does.
Sure.
But, the pairing can be better.
The potential is there, yeah. I mean, and there are flavors in beer that you can't get in wine that can pair with food, for sure.
You know, but those beer dinners are really special because the dish is specifically created to complement that beer.
Right.
So, for, I think, a lot of people who are going out to dinner, like, they're a little intimidated by the thought of picking a beer to complement their food the same way that you would get at a beer dinner.
But then that comes down to education and of the staff and, you know, their willingness to engage the consumer, and, you know, who, you know, I'm thinking about having this. Oh, well, you should try it with this beer. Or I'm having this beer. Well, you should try it with this food. You know, having that conversation as opposed to it just, you know, slipping into the normal, like, I'm just here to get your drink and then move on to somebody else.
Right.
You know, to create that, you know, that relationship that enhances the experience for the consumer. That's, you know, and when you get those people, that's the best version of what we're doing.
Right.
That's right. One thing that I love is that, you know, beer has a couple of ingredients and a couple of different textures and a couple of different flavors that wine will never have. First of all, we have hops, which is a bitter ingredient, has some resonance with, like, things that are pleasantly bitter in food, like greens and some things like that. You know, we have carbonation. So that matters, and so there's a carbonation that really highlights the starchiness that comes along with the portions of the grain that was not translated to sugar. And so you get some creaminess that comes along with how those bubbles embedded in that starch. And that's a very important component to the mouthfeel of beer, and it really carries over to some other mouthfeel components in food. So there's really a lot more opportunities for harmony whenever it comes to beer and food than you get with wine and food. What I always tell people, when you hit a home run in wine and food dinners or pairings, man, they can be exquisite. There's not a whole lot else who can compete with that. Beer can come close and can do some really nice things. But another thing is whenever you're considering a wine and food combination, if you don't do it correctly, the wine can make the food taste worse and the food can make the wine taste worse.
Yeah.
So you devalue your experience at the meal. Beer, I find the thread of that is extremely small.
Yeah.
Now, the food may not do a whole lot to highlight the characteristic of the beer, and the beer name may not do a whole lot of the other thing, but at least they're on islands of their own.
Sure.
You're not going to ruin a dish. But when you hit home runs, you can hit the same home runs with beer and food that you can in wine and food. So that thing I like. Now, you don't just have the Barstow, the pale wheat, on tonight.
No, we're
Scott,
also...
You also have another beer on, so please explain that other beer.
We do. We have Idlewild, which is our pale ale, which we're actually tweaking a bit. It's going to sort of be relaunched as a session IPA. It's always kind of been a session IPA cloaked as a pale ale. It's a very, very simple grain bill, pretty intense dry hopping regimen that it goes through, so it's got that big aroma and flavor. So we're actually taking, so it'll be 5% ABV, and then prior to now, we've done volume. So every volume has had a different hop bill. Everything else about the beer stays the same, but every 3 to 4 batches, we'd rotate the hops that are in it. So we're actually stopping that, and we're going to have a full-time hop bill to the beer. So this is what we're drinking tonight is actually volume 2, which is Azaka and Amarillo. The full-time is going to be Azaka, Amarillo, and Centennial. So very similar hop profile to what we're drinking tonight. But yeah, it's a very crushable, hoppy beer. You know, again, very simple grain bill. We don't like malty, hoppy beers at Mile Wide. We like just enough malt to kind of give it a backbone and then get out of the way and let the hops really shine through.
That's awesome. So that's a combination of, you know, Centennial, Azaka, Amarillo. What kind of flavor of the hops does that give you? Is it giving you more citrus? Is it more tropical? What do you think?
Definitely, I mean, the Amarillo and the Centennial are not too dissimilar. You're going to get a lot of, like, orange, tangerine, some apricot, some peach, those kind of notes. And then Azaka has a little bit of pine, but also a very intense tropical character. So you're going to get, it's a very, very fruit-forward hop profile.
I know, so I love it.
Centennial was really the nice first hop I fell in love with.
It's one of those godfather hops that's been available to the craft beer scene for a long time. It came after the Hills of Cascade, and it was basically Cascade just more intense. And so Cascade was put on the map by Sierra Nevada, and of course the Centennial came along after that, and it really gave a lot of flavor, a lot of things. Now I find that Amarillo a lot of times give you a slight pineapple characteristic that I like. That's demonstrated in beers like Reef Boyd's Gumball Head, which does a really nice job. But appreciate Scott for coming on and really explaining some of his beers and theories about his brewery, and being able to bring a little bit more of his flavors of Mile Wide Brewing Company to the Lexington market. I think they're doing an outstanding job.
If he will, we'll have him join us for the next episode. What do you think? Think you can join us for the next one, or do you have to go?
I can do it.
You can do it? All right, awesome. Next episode, we're probably going to be talking about glassware. So that should be fun because we have 2 out of 7 Ciceros in Kentucky here?
Yeah, it's something like that.
That's pretty that's pretty impressive right there.
Cicerons don't grow on trees, ladies and gentlemen.
They do not. But it's Pazzo's podcast.
And one of those Cicerons is borderline drunk right now, so.
Okay. That's no problem. No problem at all.
Hiccup.
Pazzo's podcast, episode number 31. Hiccup. After we've had several bonus episodes. It's been 4 bonus episodes so far, 5 total with if you count our wings, but I didn't really count that in the episodes, because that was nothing about beer. That was just us in pain. But we want to appreciate everybody. We want to thank everyone for listening, and it's always our pleasure for you guys to tune in to Pazzo's podcast. Thank you. Check us out for next week's episode when we talk about glassware.
Hiccup.